Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. Today we're talking about one of the important systems of checks and balances that make our democracy work. It's the ability to look inside the government's books and check their math. The Constitution doesn't guarantee your right to look at government documents. It was not something that the Founding Fathers thought too much about, but they didn't have too many documents either. The Federal Freedom of Information Act was passed in 1966, and New Mexico's Inspection of Public Records Act was made law in 1994. Together, those laws give you the right to look at all of the records that the government creates, with exceptions. And there are exceptions. But we're talking about this today because Albuquerque is a city in the midst of a crisis with its police force, which has been causing a much higher demand for access to files from the police department and the city, higher than normal. And that's creating more tension between the department, the city, the public, and the media. As you know, since 2010, Albuquerque police officers have shot and killed 27 people. And relative to other cities, that's a pretty high rate. For a while now, the families and activists have been criticizing APD for its handling of these incidents. But what really ignited public passions and protest was helmet camera video of one of the fatal shootings. Video and audio recordings made by police officers are public records. But many officers say releasing those videos, which may show shootings or other crimes happening, can endanger their ability to gather evidence, interview witnesses, and put together a case for prosecution. But family members who have filed wrongful death suits and journalists seeking to hold the department accountable have pressed hard to get access, timely access, to those recordings and other documents that can give the public a window into what's going on inside APD. Joining us today to talk about this are three people who have a lot of experience in this area. Susan Bowe is the executive director of the nonprofit Foundation for Open Government. She is an attorney and a former journalist. And in the interest of full disclosure, I used to have her job. I was also the executive director at FOG for a little while. Margaret Wright is the managing editor at New Mexico Compass, a nonprofit news website. She's also the former managing editor at Weekly Alibi. Jeff Proctor is an investigative producer at KRQE-TV. Before joining Channel 13 last year, Jeff spent 12 years on the criminal justice beat at the Albuquerque Journal. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Good morning.
By the way, we did invite the police chief, Gordon Eden, and communications director, Janet Blair, to be on the show this week, but they could not make it for scheduling reasons. We hope to have them on very soon. Meanwhile, Jeff, about these 27 fatal shootings, the city has paid out $23 million of taxpayer money to settle wrongful death lawsuits related to those shootings. Could better access to police records have prevented that?
That's an interesting question. I think that's what we're here to discuss this morning. I wanted to pick up on your intro where you were discussing the push to get access to these recordings, the bell tapes and the on-body camera systems and the video that those record. Part of the reason that I think many journalists and the public are so interested in seeing and hearing those recordings is over the course of reporting on some of these shooting cases, we discovered over time that the version of events that we were told, in particular early on by the police department, didn't add up when we dug in a little further and talked to witnesses and looked at some of the reports that were produced after public records requests. So those videos are really the only sort of unbiased account or record of the shootings that we have. So to answer your question, I think that the more sunlight on this particular topic, the better chance for reform. I also think that the police have a legitimate concern in what gets released and what doesn't get released, and in the ability to do their jobs. Could it have limited the number of shootings or the amount of taxpayer money that was paid out to settle some of these cases?
Let me put it this way. If the public had seen videos like the one of the James Boyd shooting up in the foothills from the beginning on TV, on YouTube, do you think that would have changed public opinion sooner?
Yes, I do. I think the Boyd video moved the middle. We were always going to have people on one side of the debate who support the police no matter what they do, and other people who don't believe that the police can do anything right, and the larger portion of the citizenry is in the middle. I think the Boyd video put into really sharp focus what people had been reading in the media. It allowed people to see for themselves some of what journalists had been telling them for quite some time.
And I want to point out that I'm not saying that all 27 of those incidents were similar. They were all really different, but controversial nonetheless. In previous conversations, you have said that APD selectively withholds information that would make the department look bad, even though legally the records should be public. Tell me how that works.
Well, here's an example of a common day in terms of a journalist getting emails from the police department. If they have a burglary suspect who they're looking for, and there's surveillance video from a 7-Eleven that they need help locating a suspect, we get that video without asking for it, without having to file a request. If there's video of a police officer saving a kid from an arroyo, they send that video out without us even having to ask for it. If there's something that might not match the narrative that they're trying to tell the public about the way they're doing their jobs, it's typically a real fight to get records. They have had to create a whole new unit within the police department to deal with public records requests. They are swamped with requests. They often wait until the outside edge that the law allows to provide records. Sometimes they go significantly past the outside edge, and sometimes they simply ignore public records requests when they're related to things that might make the department not look so good.
Susan, you run a hotline that is a statewide hotline for journalists and the public and anyone to call and ask questions, ask for help getting access to public records. Put this situation that Jeff is talking about, and Jeff is a total thorn in the side of the police department. We should say that is a known fact. He is a pain in the caboose. And he won an award from FOG a couple years ago for work that he did requesting public records to report on the police department. So that's who he is. But you, is this unusual? Do people have difficulties like this with other public bodies in the state, this tension between people who want to look at stuff and public bodies who may not?
Yes, I'm a lot busier than I should be for a state of this size. And we get calls all over the state. And the less trust there is in the government entity, be it the APD or a city council or county commissioners, then there's going to be tension. I recently received a call, and this was not necessarily unusual, for one of the appointed official members of a public body. And he could not get his hands on all the financial information, and it was sort of a 2-1 split, and he was the one. And he had to actually file an IPRA to get all of the financial documents.
So this is someone who sits on a county commission or a city
Absolutely.
Council or something like that, and he can't get access from the part of the government that he works for.
Exactly.
Right.
And he's actually one of the public officials.
But this tension is important, isn't it, Susan? I mean, the fact that we're looking for records and that people are asking them for them, this is part of an important process, isn't it?
Absolutely. And your initial comments about the fact that our Constitution really doesn't say you have access, that really is a function of statute, be it the federal statute or here in the state, we call it IPRA, the Inspection of Public Records Act. But our position at FOG is we really don't have a democracy. We don't have a First Amendment right unless we have access to the information that we can exercise that right. The First Amendment was really about was government-based and the fact that we want to see what our elected officials are doing. And so occasionally, or maybe even more than occasionally, we're going to have conflict and tension about getting those documents, you know, seeing the film. But we need to not be discouraged and to keep fighting. And both Jeff and Margaret, I can tell you, are very aggressive about doing that.
Margaret, you recently requested a big pile of records from APD. Tell me what you asked for.
Sure. Well, the editor-in-chief of The Compass, Marisa DeMarco, who's actually also a reporter here at KUNM, she filed a records request for all of the video and audio recordings associated with 24 fatal shootings. At that time, there were 24 in number, since 2010. And they complied with our request, and they appear to.
How long did that take to get the video?
It was within I think they asked for an extension of, I think it was about a month. Don't quote me on that. But and the interesting experience actually came when we went to pick up the records. Marisa actually talked about this on air yesterday with Floyd Vasquez. But just to recap a little bit, she and I and one of our contributors, Carolyn Carlson, went to pick up the records at the APD department headquarters. And we handed over money.
How much money was it?
That's the other interesting part of the story. They actually charged us almost $1,200. They charged us $20 per DVD and cassette recording, which at the time was about four times more than the city's posted policy of $5. We requested clarification and an itemized receipt to get some sense of why they had charged us so much more than the city's posted policy. We never got a response, and we were eager to get the records before Marisa left the country so we could begin our reporting process. And when we went to pick them up, we paid for them, and records staff then came back and said that they had gotten orders from city legal staff not to release the records. We told them that we weren't sure that we felt comfortable about this.
So you had the records in your hand.
We had them in our hands.
And you paid them the money, and then they're like, oh, no, give it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
wait, let me interrupt you to say, callers, we would like to hear from you today as well. Have you ever asked for public records? Is access to information about your government important to you? Do you think police officers should record everything they do? And should the public be able to see all of that? Tell us what you think. Call now 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org. You can post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Now, Margaret.
Yes.
So you are in the lobby over there at APD. You've got records in your hand, and all of a sudden there's a tug of war.
Yes. And finally, another member of the legal staff came down and said they had changed their mind again. We were free to leave with the records. So we did. And once we began combing through what was a pretty overwhelming amount of information, we began to see that there were inconsistencies in terms of how the records were labeled. It's taken us several months to actually pin down which case files corresponded with each shooting case. We're actually missing some records that we requested, and we also discovered that they provided a good deal of material that wasn't actually formally part of our request. So to us, that raises a lot of questions about what is going on at APD as far as their methods of handling records requests. It's raised questions about consistency. It's raised questions about pricing and fees. So in the interim, we actually have worked really closely with FOG and with city officials to really work towards a consistent and fair records policy so that not only journalists, but ordinary members of the public can reasonably make these requests and get information without having to pay exorbitant fees.
And let's talk about that in 1 minute. Right now, we are going to take a quick break. We've been talking about public access to government records. Call in now with your questions and comments, and we'll be back in a minute.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org. New Mexico Jazz Workshop's 2014 Summer Music Festival concludes this Friday with Salsa Under the Stars, featuring the incredible Son Como Son. Come enjoy the final evening of Salsa Under the Stars with one of New Mexico's finest salsa bands. Arrive at 6:30 for a salsa lesson with Carlota from Off-Broadway Dance Studio. Tickets available at the door or at holdmyticket.com. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Jazz Workshop.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we are talking about how the public can participate in government oversight by looking at public records. We are in the studio today with Susan Bow, an attorney from the Foundation for Open Government, Margaret Wright, a journalist with the New Mexico Compass, and Jeff Proctor, an investigative producer at KRQE Channel 13. Before the break, Margaret, you were talking about the inconsistent fees that you were being asked to pay for government records at the Albuquerque Police Department. Susan, is that unusual?
Well, I found once Margaret and Marissa called me that it was not unusual, and I did my own little informal survey. I also had another news organization contact me really about the same issue, and I tried to find out what, in fact, is being charged, and the numbers were all over the place. Sometimes they were given out at no cost. Other times they may be charged up to $10. And unfortunately, unlike paper copies, which were it's pretty clear under the statute that you can't charge more than a dollar, we really didn't have anything legally we could point to. We have this language in the statute that says you can charge actual costs. And our position was, I can go over to Staples or Office Max and buy a CD in bulk, and those are going to cost less than a dollar. And how long does it take to put, you know, a film or other documents onto a CD or a DVD? And so we became involved, and someone on our behalf talked with the legal department and got them to revise their policy. It's now $6.75 for a DVD, $2 for a CD. I think that's still pretty high, but it's certainly better than $20 a CD, which is what Compass was being charged, as well as the Daily Lobo.
Let's go to a call now. Let's talk to Barbara in Albuquerque. Welcome to the Call-In Show, Barbara.
Hi, this is a great topic. Thank you so much for putting this on. So I was arrested in the mayor's office recently, and the records for that our attorneys are being charged for are $20 per lapel cam video. That's what they're trying to tell us. Anyway, that's an aside.
But wait, let me ask you, Barbara, when did they give you that quote?
They gave my lawyer that quote about 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Oh, well, I think
the list of their ostensible witnesses is about, I don't know, it's single space, takes up a more than a page of police officers and various other people who they are, you know, claiming are witnesses in their thing. Anyway, I probably shouldn't talk about it too much because it's a pending case. But I'm really calling because last week I called the mayor's office and said, you know, when Mary Hawks was hunted down and shot after being chased for 3 hours with really no evidence, the police officer says she was in a stolen car. We've never heard about the car. Was that a bait car? Was it just parked on the street? Was she sleeping in it, which she was known to do? It doesn't really matter. She was hunted for 3 hours and then shot. They said she had a gun. And at the press conference, after that shooting, the police chief produced a photograph of a gun that he said looked like the gun she had. They never showed us the gun they say she had. They just showed us a photo of what they said looked like the gun. So I've been sort of bugged about this. Where did Mary Hawks get the gun? What's the provenance on the gun? And I've been agitating about this for a while. And I finally called the mayor's office, and they said I have to file an IPRA to get it. any information about the gun. I talked to Janet Blair about it one time. Months ago, she said, oh, yeah, we're going to release that information on Friday. You know, where is she? $95,000 she makes, and she's not there today on your show. Anyway, I am interested in whether or not any of these people have tried to follow up at all on the Mary Hawk shooting, because there's massive inconsistencies in the reports of how she was, you know, apprehended, shot, her injuries that she had, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that not enough attention has been paid to that poor young woman.
Barbara, thank you. Thank you so much. We are going to talk about this right now. I think Barbara brings up an interesting point here about public trust. And when there is a problem with public trust, this is what puts the pressure on public records, because when they don't trust you and you are in government and you're doing something right, it's really nice to be able to say, hey, look, this is the budget that we proposed and this is how much money we actually spent. Your questions are unfounded. Or this is how we said this incident happened. And look, here's the video that proves it. There's potential to, prove that what the government did was right here. And I think a lot of officers and departments in law enforcement who have adopted body-worn cameras, many of them say this is a good opportunity for them to restore public trust by showing, A, what they go through, which can be really hellish, and we're not really aware of that, but B, also to prove to the public what happened. But Barbara's question was, have you guys looked into Mary Hawks? Jeff, tell us what you've done.
Yes, it's one of the cases that we're obviously following really closely. I can say that what they have produced in terms of evidence of the gun that the police say that she had is a photograph of the gun that was taken at the crime lab. We've asked for a photograph of the gun at the scene. We haven't been provided one of those. In fact, we've been told that they will not produce one of those. That said, there is some body-worn camera footage of a couple of police officers arriving after Ms. Hawks was shot that shows something lying on the ground next to her. It's very difficult to say whether that's a gun. But that's some of the follow-up we've done. I'd like to say also that we've had a huge public records problem with trying to do background research on the police officer who shot Ms. Hawks. His name is Jeremy Deere, and he's got a pretty long history of using force against citizens here. And one of the things that we've tried to do, because his camera was not on at the time of this shooting, is look back over the course of the past couple of years and incidents of use of force against citizens that he's been involved in to see whether he turned his camera on in any of those instances. And we have a public records request that's now well past the deadline in that particular instance.
Margaret, what was your experience in trying to follow up on the Mary Hawks incident?
We also submitted public records requests for audio and video surrounding her case file, her shooting. They responded initially by saying the investigation was still pending. We didn't get any follow through with them, so we actually submitted a brand new request, and which they haven't responded to yet.
And, you know, I think we all can understand that the police department has had a massive increase in requests for information since this situation. But Susan, let me just ask you briefly, I mean, how much time can the government really be asked to spend on fulfilling these requests?
That's a really good question. And at FOG, we're not totally without sympathy for public records custodians. And I'm told that APD is hiring two or three additional records custodians to respond to some of these requests. And so that is an issue that we look at. However, as a society, I think with the IPRA statute, we have decided that we're willing to pay for that. We think it's important. And in some instances, a public record custodian is going to be busier than they normally are. And you just have to anticipate that.
Let's go to the phones right now and talk to Catherine in Los Ranchos. Catherine, welcome to the KUNN call-in show.
Thank you very much. And I'm just going to launch into something that's it's not going to appeal to any anti-semantics out there, But what I'm hearing is, I think, a fundamental problem that we're having, and that is when I heard reference made to the cost in tax dollars of all of this systemic problems, it triggered in me the understanding once again that we're breaking our pledge of allegiance to, you know, like one nation indivisible, and we're separating ourselves by, instead of saying things like in tax dollars, like we're not all paying taxes, show me your green card, but we are all paying taxes, so it is, we should maybe think about using language like our dollars are going into this, and our police department is having all of these serious, serious problems, and our community fellows are being injured or killed or troubled or whatever. But it's we who are breaking our pledge, and they... we've got to connect with them.
I agree, Catherine. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's talk a little bit more now about the money that's involved here. This week, the New York Times published an op-ed by a former creative writing professor here at UNM who harshly criticized Albuquerque for being a city riddled with violent crime, homeless problems, and big problems with the police force. This caused quite a stir. I saw a lot about it on Facebook. People were loved this guy, hated this guy, a lot of strong emotions. But what interested me, there was a story about it in the Journal that quoted the Chamber of Commerce head Terry Cole saying that after the James Boyd shooting, people who wanted to visit Albuquerque or start a business didn't do either of those things. She said, clearly, that creates challenges for making Albuquerque the type of place where people want to start a business or raise a family. And this made me think about how the public has not only a vested interest, but do they actually have a responsibility to oversee parts of their government because it's in their best interest? Anyone? Margaret.
Pardon me. Part of what's so fascinating about working on these public records requests and delving into them is that some of the tension that you referred to surrounding the records themselves, to me, is actually a reflection of sort of this larger tension that is present that I think perhaps the Chamber of Commerce head was referring to, where the community and the agencies tasked with overseeing public safety of the community are feeling at odds and perhaps insulated from each other. And so part of what I think the media in particular, and speaking as a member of the media, I think the media has to begin thinking of themselves not just as also an isolated member of the community, but also part of the community as well, thinking of the police officers as all part of the community. We're all in this together. We all care about the quality of life in this city. And using public records as a glimpse into how that public life plays out on the streets and in interactions between members of the public and government officials is really important. And being able to all engage and to have stakeholders, whether they be members of law enforcement, whether they be families of victims who were shot by members of law enforcement, members of the media, we have a responsibility to engage in this in an open, transparent, critical, and sensitive way.
That's a good point. Susan, you have done some work recently on another area of law enforcement, and we're obviously talking about APD because it's in the news every day, but I know that reporters have long had a hard time getting records from other law enforcement agencies all over the state, including the New Mexico Department of Public Safety. You were involved in fighting for access to information about what recruits are taught at the police academy. Tell me about why you were involved there.
I received a call from a citizen a few months ago saying that the Law Enforcement Academy, which is out of Santa Fe, which is a department of the Department of Public Safety, was no longer making their curriculum available for public comment. And of course, how we train our police officers is going to be how they're going to respond in a critical situation. And this particular caller, or that caller to our hotline, has been and continues to sort of dog this process. And interestingly, the Law Enforcement Academy had its regular meeting in June, and there really weren't that many people in attendance. And what has happened is, this is not strictly IPRA, but they have taken the curriculum-making process out of rulemaking. And when we have rulemaking, and I don't want to get too technical here, we have to have public comment. It's not just something that's the discretion of the council or the chair, but we want to know what the public thinks. And so instead, there was a rule that was passed in December by the Law Enforcement Academy Board saying, we're not going to do rulemaking anymore. We're going to defer to our director, and then we will approve what the director says. This is what the curriculum should be.
So they said, we are going to come up with this list of lesson plans for
right.
our recruits, and we're going to do it in secret now, and we're not going to tell you what's going on.
Well, under the rule that was ultimately approved, they still have to post it on their website. But right now, actually, the lesson plans are not posted. And the reason they're not posted is they have not yet been approved by the board, even though we've had one full class of recruits that have gone through the process.
Let's take a call right now. Let's talk to Maria in Albuquerque. Maria, welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that just because you make a rule doesn't mean it's going to work. In my situation, I went and requested public records, and what I got was an officer on the report saying, oh, my equipment malfunctioned, and then they handed me a tape that had been covered over with laughter. So rather than getting really the history and the recording, I got, you know, them just hanging out and laughing at me. And so basically, I think that unless you attach some serious sanctions to the city and to the officers themselves, maybe even to the commander, you're not going to correct this at all. They know every loophole, and they're going to jump through it.
Thank you, Maria, for that call. Susan?
Well, I think that Maria has a very good point that, you know, all of us, I think, if we don't believe that we're going to get caught or there are going to be sanctions, will tend to misbehave. And under IPRA, you can file a lawsuit, get your attorney fees, and that may be where we need to end up. Right now, there is a lawsuit that's pending against APD that was filed by Peter St. Cyr and the Albuquerque Free Press. And what they had requested was a list of, there were several things, but it was a pretty discreet request and wanting to know what the inventory was in the Albuquerque Police Department. And so we occasionally, I'm only one person, I have wonderful volunteer lawyers, but we are not able to file as many lawsuits as would be ideal. Right now we're involved in getting the Human Services Department audit, and I have wonderful volunteer attorneys, but that's what maybe needs to happen in terms of sanctions.
Thank you, Susan. I should remind our listeners that we invited APD Chief Gordon Eden and Janet Blair to join us today, and they couldn't because of scheduling problems. I also want to talk about Maria's point about the recording not reflecting what she wanted to see on it. And, you know, in my reporting, have talked to a number of police officers who have said, look, how many times do you try to take a picture with your phone or record a video with your camera and it's messed up or your fingers over it? They're saying there are times when the cameras legitimately fail. Now, again, we have to have some sort of trust from the public to say, okay, look, I understand that. And when there isn't that trust, that's when you get problems with that. I want to, we are going to take just a really quick break right now. We've been talking about public access to government records, including video and audio recordings. Call in now with your questions and comments. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow at kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
Please join the African American Performing Arts Center Foundation at their fourth annual fundraising gala featuring the Ricky Malachi Jazz Ensemble on Saturday, August 9th, 7 p.m. at 310 San Pedro Drive Northeast. The VIP reception begins at 5:30 p.m. and the concert begins at 7. For more information, call 222-0785 or visit aapac.org. A message from the tax-exempt African American Performing Arts Center Foundation.
On the next, Making Contact.
There's a giant octopus that's essentially wrapping its tentacles around North America.
The Canadian tar sands is the largest industrial project on Earth, and the potential environmental consequences have brought together citizens from across borders to fight its rippling effects. On this edition, the first of a two-part special on the growing resistance to the tar sands, Fighting Goliath, produced by Barbara Bernstein.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we are talking about public records and how the public can participate in government oversight by looking at those records. With us today are Susan Bowe, an attorney from the Foundation for Open Government, Margaret Wright, a journalist with the New Mexico Compass, and Jeff Proctor, an investigative producer at KRQE Channel 13. Jeff, I know that you feel strongly that videos and other records, but specifically videos, should be handed over to the public and the media and really pretty quickly. The law says public records should be turned over immediately, if possible. But is there a legitimate concern that showing these videos on TV or on the web right after the incident could hamper investigations?
I think in a case like a police shooting, typically there are a couple of different kinds of investigations that take place of a police shooting. There's a criminal investigation that takes place, and there's an internal affairs investigation that takes place. They interview the officer pretty quickly as a matter of course. I think that once that interview and a couple of the other key interviews of people who were eyewitnesses to the shooting have taken place, I personally don't see any reason that a recording shouldn't be released to the public right after that. I mean, we've heard any number of excuses, frankly, from the police department that include things like, you know, that video is still being processed. We live in the digital age now. There's no one in a dark room with stop bath and pieces of film who are processing and developing film. These are digital recordings that, frankly, should be able to be emailed to the public or the news media who've requested
them.
Yeah,
but what if there's a video with a whole bunch of witnesses to the crime that allegedly happened on the video? You know, doesn't it take some time for the police to interview all those people? I mean, if you put the video up on the web, then, you know, don't you ruin it? Everybody can say, you know, yeah, I saw the gun. It was just like the one on TV.
I guess if we're talking about a police shooting case, again, you have a number of witnesses who need to be interviewed for that. That's something that by standard operating procedure is supposed to take place in a relatively short period of time. And once that's finished and complete, I just don't get it in terms of withholding that video from giving the public an opportunity to see if what the police told us about that case is true.
Margaret,
I just want to bring up a couple of points to sort of piggyback on what Jeff said. But one of the things is that in some of the records that have been released, there was a recording of an interview of a APD videographer, I believe, or video expert, who actually detailed a procedure that he was instructed to undergo to download videos to a hard drive and to a Dropbox folder with a shareable link. In theory, that PIOs would share that link with media. And then a command came down from the chief to actually cease and desist that whole process. And begin viewing the material to selectively omit things that could be problematic for the department.
Well, I think so certainly
that raises some questions.
There are, you know, there are legal issues and
right.
there are exceptions to the Public
exactly.
Records Act. There are things that are required by law to be blacked out or are
right.
redacted. So there is an obligation on the part of records custodians to do that. Let's go to the phones and talk to Charlie from Florida. Charlie, welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Hi. Let me just, you know, start by making a statement. There is ample evidence, sufficient evidence out there that the APD and the city are engaged in a knowing and willful pattern and practice of deliberate denial of the public records productions under the law. And in particular, what Margaret was just pointing out with the Boyd videos is that we know that the city has videos, that they have produced videos that they claim are the entirety, and we know from that interview in particular that that is false. That's a violation of the law. Now, there are exceptions to New Mexico's public records law. They are very small in number, and they are very narrowly construed. If there is no legal exception, the city has an obligation to produce those records, and it consciously and intentionally doesn't. Now, let me just give you two examples.
Charlie,
let
me say thank you for that point, and we are going to discuss it. But first, we're going to take another call. Let's talk to Katrina from Albuquerque. Katrina, do we have you? Welcome to the KUNM call-in show.
Well, thank you, Gwyneth. I was just going to build on how everybody involved, it sounds like there are lots of interactions between the community and the our departments and whatnot. And if we would meet each other and document all the way through our part of these interactions, like any time on telephone or in person, we meet a Sarah or a John. We say, hi, Sarah, I'm here for my records or whatever. And how's it going with you today while she's pulling up the records? Or isn't this a terrible problem? Because these are just fellow people, you know, doing their jobs. And when we start letting it be known that we're actually taking names and we know who we're talking to when, and if Sarah or John can't produce what we understand and know to be the law for us, then we say, Sarah, no problem. This is, can I talk to somebody who's got more power or something, because we're just talking simple law here, aren't we? And Sarah and John will usually say, you know, you're right, and here's my manager, or let's get on up the system, but take names so that when we have to get to the top to get the laws followed, then we've got names all the way. We've
Thank you, Katrina. You bring up a really good point. Let's talk about these last two calls here. The first one about the limits on public records and how to be sure that the law is being followed. How can we know that we're really getting what we're supposed to be getting? And the second one saying, you know, you, the public, also have an obligation to keep good records. You demand this of the government. But if you're involved in a situation and you're asking for records, you should keep your own, too. Margaret?
I just want to mention that one of the things that all of this raises for me, again, is the obligation that the media has to present this data in context and to really work with law enforcement to understand how surveillance fails to capture the full experience that an officer has when he or she is interacting with the public. There are things that cameras miss in terms of bias, officer bias, in terms of protocol and tactical training. So I think part of perhaps the frustration that Charlie is getting at is that the lack of transparency that reporters and members of the public often experience when it comes to their interactions with public officials means that we lack that context that we need to really make sense in a sensitive, responsible way of the data.
Well, this is something we all know from personal experience, that transparency engenders confidence. I am curious about something. You show me that it is true. I believe you. If you say, well, I can't show you this stuff, immediately you become paranoid and you start, you know, wondering what is true, what's not true. And that often makes things worse. When
exactly.
people can't see the records, when you tell them no, the situation goes from curious to total conspiracy in like 30 seconds. Jeff?
I would just say that... to kind of go back to something we were discussing earlier and the huge volume of public records requests that are coming to the police department now and their necessity to hire additional staff, part of that is self-inflicted. I've done this for a really long time, and there were for years, if I wanted a 911 recording, I called someone at the police department and they met me in the lobby at the police department in 30 minutes and handed me a copy of the 911 recording. I would pay a nominal fee for that and move along. What's happening now is if you want to know how a police officer's name is spelled, well, you can send us an IPRA. So that's part of what's taking place here. And in addition to the public records portion of all of this, to go back to what Margaret was talking about and being able to place these events in context, it's not just about being able to report on a recording or a series of documents that we've obtained through an IPRA request. We need to be able to go and ask questions
exactly.
of the people in power about what it is we've seen. And they have APD in particular, and certainly other law enforcement agencies within the state too, to go back to the DPS thing Susan was talking about. They've limited journalists and therefore the public's ability to come and ask them questions about the way it is
Absolutely.
They do their business. And that, frankly, removes our ability to do the accountability piece of our job. So it's not just about complying with the laws that we have on the books. It's about having an honest dialogue with the public.
You know, this reminds me that the Obama administration has been under fire for transparency issues. Just recently, about 40 journalism organizations called on the Obama administration to stop being so secretive, stop blocking access to documents. But really, a big part of the issue was that they were blocking access to people, not letting you talk to government officials and then not letting you talk to them without minders. I mean, this is what happens in North Korea, right?
And it happens at every level of government in New Mexico. It's not just the city of Albuquerque. That's throughout the state.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Obama is just being criticized so harshly from people you would think would like him. But secrecy is not cool at any level of government, right?
No, it isn't. And it's not true. Secrecy isn't good in interpersonal relationships, and it certainly isn't true when we take it to more global situation.
Thank you, Dr. Susan.
But thank you. But I did want to comment on both what Margaret and Jeff said, and they're, you know, out on the street. And I was talking to the head of the equivalent of a FOIA group in another state about the difference between transparency and access. And the way she described it is access is what legally you have to do. We have IPRA, turn over the documents. But transparency goes beyond what legally we're required to do. And that means that a reporter can sit down and talk to somebody, be it at the, you know, city council or a police officer or somebody from the department about this is what has happened. And that's what I think we're lacking now is that transparency also.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you're making there. And transparency also means putting out information you haven't been asked for yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Albuquerque has actually been really good about that with information that's much less controversial. They've done a lot of work in putting non-controversial information up online. The state has done a lot of that with the Sunshine Portal, which has been really helpful. Margaret?
I was just, I wanted to mention that one of the things that is key to the Compasses project with these public records, and we're in the process of constructing a database that will be public and searchable. It'll be open to members of the public, to other journalists, to policymakers. And for us, the crux of this, in part, is a question about how can true transparency reduce sensationalism? How can it encourage all stakeholders to have a voice in the reform process? As you said, APD is in crisis, and part of good crisis management involves open dialogue. And it's not just about how the public perceives the city, but the people who are charged with keeping them safe.
And so, I should say, in my conversations with folks within law enforcement, that is a real criticism of the public, the publicizing and airing, broadcasting these videos, that it's sensational.
Exactly.
That it is just, you know, a push for ratings, that, you know, this is just some people want to see these violent videos and they want to do this stuff. That is a criticism. Let's hear from one of our listeners now. Let's talk to Romeo or Romeo from Albuquerque. Which is it?
Either way, whatever you like.
Okay.
Rolling off your tongue there, it's fine. First, I want to say thank you to Mr. Proctor because, you know, I understand the criticism there that, you know, we only want to hear the negative and that's why they do it. But I'd rather hear the negative than the media turn a blind eye to it, if you catch my drift. But getting back to the topic at hand, the whole idea that they are, you know, withholding information that should be public, I think that falls in lockstep with what they've been doing as far as the thin blue line goes. Now, some people call the thin blue line the line between the criminals and the citizens, in which they are the line that protects us. I see it as the line that they won't cross because they're afraid of retaliation when they see wrongdoing. The so-called good cop can't do anything about the bad cop when they see them breaking the law, because their lives will be miserable as a police officer, and basically their careers are halted.
Romeo, we have just a few seconds left. What do you think the public needs to do?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, even now, there's they're trying to quash anything that we can do, which is like, as an individual, you can record the police yourself. But now they're trying to pull these federal wiretapping laws on you and even going as far as taking forcibly your recording equipment, i.e. your iPhone, and trying to erase the evidence. They're also Apple's on board with the police, to where they made an app where they can disable your iPhone's ability to record. Now, that's pretty big brother to me.
Romeo, thank you so much. I want to make a point about what he just said. It is always legal to videotape the police in doing their job in public. You should all know that all the time. It's always legal. They are not allowed to take your phone. They're not allowed to destroy your recording when they are doing their job in public. So, you know, use your rights there. Thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you especially to our guests, Susan Bowe of the Foundation for Open Government, Margaret Wright with the New Mexico Compass, and thanks to KRQE Channel 13 for lending us Jeff Proctor for this hour.
It was lovely being here.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you.
We have posted links to the information we discussed today, so you can check it out at kunm.org. If you missed any of our program or joined us late, if you want to share this with friends, the audio of the show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email us comments about this show to callinshow@kunm.org. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for KUNM Radio. You can follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Michael Hess screened your calls. Kaveh Movahed was our assistant producer. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan.